Hello, and welcome to the Victoria PLC Interim Results Analyst Conference Call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question-and-answer session. Today, I'm pleased to present Geoff Wilding, Chairman. Please go ahead with your meeting.
Good morning, everybody. Look, thanks very much for joining us on this call. We obviously had a very pleasing set of results for the half year, which I'll hand across to Mike to take you through the key numbers.
Thanks, Geoff. Morning, everyone. If you've got, hopefully you've got the slides in front of you, and I'll sort of walk through, and I'll sort of focus on the key ones. If we start on slide two, which is really the highlights, revenue for the half year was 305.306 million, which, you know, and we'll get into the detail, but in the context of COVID-19, we are extremely happy with this result. It's a fantastic result, pretty much flat on the prior year, and considering the unprecedented times that we're in, and we'll get into this in more detail, how we've done this, but, you know, we're really happy with that result. And really that comes from significant outperformance in the post the original lockdown of April, May in Europe, significant outperformance of the business post that time from June through to September. I'll come into more detail in a minute. EBITDA, 52.4 million. That's a 17.2% margin. And again, I'll come into a bit more detail on how the margins were significantly higher in the post-lockdown period as well. PBT of 13.7 and an EPS of 8p per share. Again, operating cash flow, a very strong conversion, as always, consistent conversion really from EBITDA, as we always have, as everyone knows, I think, very steady and minimal working capital, cash consumption requirements in this business, and a stable CapEx as well. Net debt, again, I'll come back to in more detail, but essentially pretty flat on the year end, the March position, 365. But this actually represents a 5 million reduction in net debt, and then FX, sterling weakened and FX swung the other way to bring it back up again from a translational point of view. But actually there's deleveraging in there. And the leverage, net debt to EBITDA, 3.3, which again has been very stable. And again, considering the times that we live in and the lockdown that we went through in April and May in particular, we think is a fantastic result. So if we just quickly, I think actually probably the best slide to focus on really is next is slide four. So if you skip over three, slide four sets out the revenue performance and it splits it between the sort of lockdown period. It shows you the total for the half year. It shows you what happened in the lockdown and then it shows you the sort of like-for-like position for the post-lockdown period. So I think as everyone knows, and we reported previously in our trading update, April and May, you know, was certainly impacted by the lockdown. And you can see there, in particular in the UK, where all retailers were shut. So effectively our customer base was shut for a significant period of that time. But then post that time in the right-hand column, you can see that, you know, we grew our revenues. This is year on year. We grew our revenues by 27, 28% in both the UK Europe Soft Flooring division and in the Ceramic Tiles division, and Australia was broadly flat, which is absolutely fantastic. On a like-for-like basis, the UK Europe division is pretty much the same number. That's really just, you know, FX differences coming through there. The Ceramic Tile division, the reason that looks like a flat number there compared to the plus 27% above is because we made an investment, as everyone will remember, in the end of February, so right towards our year end, of into an additional factory in Italy, which helped us to deliver some additional synergies and growth out of our Italian ceramics business. I won't get into this in too much detail because Philip, I'm sure, will discuss further. But essentially, that drove a lot of growth, which is in the 27.4% figure, but we sort of strip out for the like-for-like figure, which, you know, is debatable. I mean, I think a lot of that growth is synergy, and so, you know, that's real growth that we've delivered through that project. And then in Australia did have a lockdown itself. I mean, actually having Australia has been fantastic in terms of, again, you know, like many other things, it doesn't correlate so much to Europe. So it's a nice sort of business to have in terms of smoothing things out. And that was certainly true with COVID. They had lockdowns at different times. They actually had a lockdown in sort of latter part of August and in through to September, which did affect the September number, which went through, you know, to the half year. But certainly in the non-lockdown period, June to August, again, we saw, you know, 15% like-for-like growth year on year, which is just fantastic. And then the total like-for-like position from June to September was plus 9.2% across the group. If we go on to the next slide, slide five, this shows the margin performance by division. Again, looking at the half year and then looking at the post-lockdown period, you can see that the 17.2% at the bottom, which I referred to earlier for the group average, this is 50 basis points lower than the prior year on a like-for-like basis. You'll look back at page, you know, three and you'll say, oh, no, hold on, it's actually 150 basis points. But 100 basis points of that, as it says in this call-out box below, is purely mix effect from acquisitions. We bought some businesses last year. They were lower margin than our incumbent businesses. And so once you mix those in fully on a pro forma basis, that knocks 100 basis points off our margin. But that's not organic performance at all. So the 50 basis points reduction is the actual reduction. And, of course, that came from the lockdowns again. So, again, if you strip out April and May and look at the post the June to September period, this data on the right-hand side, you'll see that, again, just fantastic margin performance, particularly in the UK and Europe's soft flooring division, which everyone knows, I think, is primarily a UK business. We saw 5 percentage points increase in our margin compared to the equivalent period last year. But across the board, very, very strong margin performance. And again, I won't get into too much detail because Philip's going to come back and talk after me about the organic projects that have delivered that. Moving on to the slide six, this is replicating a slide that I showed at the full year, just again to give detail around the non-underlying items, because of course, understandably, people are very interested in these, and there's a few of them. Due to the nature of our, you know, acquisitive strategy, we had 0.4. I'll run through very briefly. The big box in the middle with all the numbers in it, that's the half year, and I split the cost into different categories, which are the columns. The sort of column at the far right is the prior year comparator. So I'm focusing on the box in the middle with all the numbers in the middle. The top number there, 0.4, we had a few acquisition-related costs. We obviously haven't bought anything in that period, but this is, you know, as everyone knows, we're constantly prospecting and looking at opportunities. There's a little bit of cost there associated with prospecting and doing diligence on some opportunities. The next number, 3 million, this is a mixture of COVID-related exceptional costs, so where we spent money on some PPE or just reorganizing our activities for social distancing reasons and so on. So there were some exceptional costs associated with getting that done as a one-off. And then on top of that, we do have a few, and again, I won't get into too much detail because Philip will, but a few new small synergy or reorg projects this year, which have started, which will be finished by the year end. And these are quite small, but some of those costs are in there. And those are mostly redundancy costs within that 3 million. The next section, other operational items below, these are the ones that people will be familiar with that repeat, and the main one being the amortization of the acquired intangibles. Again, because of IFRS acquisition accounting, we amortize those. That's, you know, brands and customer lists and the like. And then down in finance costs, we had 1.4 million of additional interest costs in the period that related to the fact that we drew our 75 million revolving credit facility back in March as a precautionary measure, you know, due to COVID. I mean, at the time, no one knew what was going to happen. And I think a number of businesses did this. And we did, no one knew whether there was going to be a liquidity crisis out there. So we drew that money. We didn't need it, but it sat on the balance sheet for 6 months because we drew it for 6 months to get that certainty. And then in September, we repaid it. So that cost us 1.4 million of interest, but, you know, we did it for a reason. And that's it, really. The other numbers in there aren't particularly significant. And they're things like mark-to-market adjustments and translational differences, which go through the finance items. So as you can see, there are a very minimal number of non-underlying items, and in particular cash non-underlying items. Just going over to page 7, this is cash flow, summary of the cash flow. I mentioned earlier, a very stable position in terms of conversion from EBITDA to operating cash flow. You can see there the working capital. I'm looking at this sort of first, this highlighted column. The other two columns are the prior year comparatives for the half year and the full year. If you look at the sort of underlying movement in working capital, 1.7 million, which again, minimal. And I think there was a lot of concern from, investors and other commentators, during COVID that there'd be huge working capital swings in a lot of businesses as a result of lockdowns. We managed this very, very carefully. We put in place what we internally termed our emergency sort of treasury measures, and we managed very, very carefully our credit control, our payments, and our stock, and we managed to keep the position very stable. We did see a bit of a swing in the first quarter, which contained the lockdowns. I think we reported previously we saw about a 7 million operating cash outflow, but then that reversed very quickly in the, and that's A, not that significant, and B, reversed very quickly in the second quarter. So we converted 83% of EBITDA to operating cash before interest and tax, and then you can see the interest and tax below that. And then that resulted in a free cash generated of 18.3 million. Going over to the next slide, this again, as I always show, just shows the bridge of net opening to closing net debt, which again I've touched on has been pretty flat, but it shows you how we generated that 18.3 from the previous page. There were some earn-out payments mostly in the first quarter actually, but in the first half year of 10 million. A very small amount of expansionary capex related to some of those projects I mentioned earlier, and some other small items in FX translation differences, and that effectively took us back up to around about the same number. So most of the difference coming from the earn-out payments that we made. And then just turning over to page 9, this just shows a breakdown of that net debt. And the key message here really is the very bottom highlighted bar, which is that our leverage is at 3.3 times as at September, which, is absolutely stable. Again, I think there was a lot of concern that leverage would spike because profits would drop or because working capital would swing against us and cash would be consumed. That has absolutely not been the case. So overall, in terms of what we've done from revenue and margin uplift and how that's translated into cash generation and ultimately our net debt and leverage position, it's really been a fantastic half year since the lockdowns ended in May. That's it. I'll pass over to Philip.
Thank you, Mike. good morning to all. So we are very happy to announce that the soft flooring division has done exceptionally well, with 200 basis points like-for-like, or even 500 basis points if we have a look at the post-lockdown period. There's, of course, a good reason for that. It doesn't happen just overnight. So the main reason why, in the very start of it, is that we had a quick start ahead of all our competitors. If we look at how our competitors have performed when we were already sitting with our customers, a lot of our competitors were still studying the furlough schemes to see how they could optimize them. And we didn't want to furlough our sales teams. We just went full throttle, visited the customers, and overwhelmed them with our new products which we had launched in the previous years. That's one of the reasons. Another reason is, of course, all the hard work which has been done over the last couple of years in investing in the capacity. You will remember the new finishing line we've put down, a couple of new testing machines. So we wanted, if ever we came to a growth period, we wanted it to be sustainable. And this is exactly what we have managed to do. We have gained a few percent of market share, and we definitely want to hold to them. If we talk about reorganization, you remember In the last year, what we've done, we did a closure of the spinning mill, we did a closure of the extrusion. So a lot of this, a lot of projects were conducted in order to beef up the margin. And since this strong demand, the focus has further shifted towards margin. A year ago, you will remember that we were chasing the volume, but now we have fully focused on the margin. We have screened further sales ledgers, and we've been bottom slicing margin dilutive products. Now was the time to do that. We had enough beef demand, so it was now or never. So we've taken some margin dilutive products out of the sales. Also, we've spent a lot of time integrating the GTEF plant. As you know, last year we bought the plant in Dewsbury, where we have focused to make all our natural fibers, so that we could focus in the Abingdon plant on the synthetic fibers. And the focus on the synthetic yarn, which we have done in Abingdon, has led to 30% more production in the Abingdon plant and 12% fewer employees. So the productivity has gained a lot. On top of that, we've done OPEX projects in the carpet manufacturing. We've invested on all of the tufting machines on yarn breaking detection systems, so which will allow us to tuft with two tufters on one machine. We've done a beaming project because we wanted to reduce the batch sizes for the less running SKUs. We've managed an in-depth review of all the labor which was allocated to the production, and the direct labor reduced with about 7% and the indirect labor with 76%. So all the indirect labor we've been okay, there's further progress there to be made. We should be in a position to add another 10 to 15% there. So all of that carpet manufacturing comes with logistics. And don't forget, in logistics, the logistics remains our key differentiating factor. We are now manufacturing, and this is always our key credo. We are not only a manufacturer, but we are also a distributor. So it has a differentiating factor versus our overseas competitors. And across our three warehouses, so we have a warehouse in the north, the Midlands, and the south, we are now handling over 22,000 order lines per week. This includes cuts and rolls, cuts being part of a roll, which is tailor-made for a customer, and rolls, so both of them. In both categories, we have grown. And just to give you one example, in the second quarter, we have grown our cuts with about 45%, and the total order lines, we've grown them with 56%. Also, service-wise, our on-time delivery for available stock has risen from 91 to 94% across the whole country. The investment in cutting tables has definitely benefited to the productivity as well. We're now cutting 45% more orders with 25% fewer people. And still, there is capacity available because we've installed extra capacity in the last year on cutting. So we can do another further 20% growth on top of the growth, the fantastic growth we've had till now. We can have another 20% growth without involving any capex. Also, because of that growth, we needed to do a fleet expansion, and we added 7 new vehicles, which is bringing total fleet on 102 vehicles for the logistics operation. With regards to the underlay, I'm page 11 on the bottom side. The underlay, also, we are extremely busy in the underlay. We have been working on 100% capacity. We are still on 100% capacity. We have orders in the books which will bring us to the beginning of February already. We've been lucky that we were in time to remove all the potential bottlenecks which could happen on a demand upswing. So that was done. We've also brought logistics in-house. We were using third-party logistics. And as we had learned from the corporate division, how important logistics is in the strategy of the company. So we did not want this to be part of a third-party logistics, so we wanted to do that in-house. We've also, in preparing for Brexit, diversified the supply chain, as we've done in the carpet as well. So we've taken new suppliers on board to ensure the raw material availability, of course, post-Brexit. We are bringing in quite a bit of raw materials this side of Christmas in order to secure the production into the next year. So then I'll switch over to the next page, page 12. So the ceramic tile division, where we have a post-lockdown sales growth of about 27.4%. So if we have a quick look in Italy, so you know Italy is a mixed picture. We have the cheaper products which we're making and the medium to high end. The medium to high end is mainly made in the newly acquired factory, which is Ascot. So in the meantime, we have filled the complete capacity of the acquired company. The full integration of the whole Ascot factory has now come to completion. We've also optimized the workforce with a workforce reduction from 368 to 250 FTEs, and we've beefed up the capacity with a couple of changes on the kilns, which are the ovens to bake or to cook the tiles, which have led to an increased capacity of 1.2 million square meters in red body and 700,000 square meters in porcelain tiles. For the moment, at this moment in time, we're still outsourcing capacity because the capacity is still not enough of the pent-up demand which we're seeing in Italy. Don't forget, the Italian market is mainly focused on the DIY market, and the DIY market goes strong. We are exporting to Eastern Europe, Germany and France, and we have a lot of orders there. So actually, we are currently looking for more smaller bolt-on acquisitions which are specifically targeting the sizes and the capacities in red body and white body and porcelain which we need going forward. If we have a look at Spain, so there was a bit longer duration and a bit less government support. So quarter one was more negatively influenced, but having said that, it took a bit longer to come up to stream in Spain because the inventory was relatively low. For the moment, we are at full capacity in Spain, so we are bringing the inventory up to speed because the way, don't forget, we're selling medium to high end in Spain. So, and it's a lot of individual orders, and the orders can only be shipped once the total order has been composed. So, it happens as we speak, and the demand is strong. So, also for the Spanish factories, I think we'll be well busy till the end of January with clearing out the order books. Very important, and a cost reduction project which we've done in Spain, which is the integration of the Casa Infinita brand. Casa Infinita brand is one of the Caribbean brands, and we've integrated that with Ibero. Ibero is the company which we recently, I think it was in the back end of or in the middle of last year, Ibero, and we've integrated these two brands. So now they're forming one sales team into the market. On top of that, also in the second quarter, we've done a lot of OPEX initiatives and reduced the cost of the utilities. We've made new contracts in the utilities, so which was pretty helpful. So for the moment, it's clearing back orders, bringing up the inventory up to speed, so to increase the stock levels indeed. So if we turn the page on page 13, so which is the third division, Australia. Mike has already alluded to that. So the first half year, the EBITDA is up 10.7%, which is so the margin like for like 210 basis points. So we have two divisions, as you know, we have carpet and underlay. The revenue is down, as I said, EBITDA up. So the demand has been, we were performing extremely well till the lockdown happened in Australia, and we've seen that we have a very loyal customer base. So even when we had to close our factories for over 7 weeks, the orders kept on coming in. We have built up a back order book. We didn't disrupt the supply chain as well. Immediately after the lockdown, we're just managing to bring the inventories back up to speed and to deliver. So we've been we can still see post lockdown the continued increased demand in Australia. Also, in the meantime, during the lockdown, we had prepared a couple of new developments, which we have brought to the market in order to have this continued upbeat demand. So I can also say that the underlay, so as you know, we had the underlay factory, which is Dunlop. We had two underlay factories, and we have done an integration process, whereas the production would be done in one plant in Sydney, and we've closed the Melbourne plant. This has come completely to completion, and it has delivered all the budgeted synergies and efficiencies. So the business in general, so if we look at how we have performed lockdown, it has been an incredible performance. We're still enjoying, we still have this beat up demand. So we have had a lot of questions in the past. Okay, it is not just an initial demand and then it will fall back. I can tell you that we've definitely taken market share. We've outperformed all our competitors into the market. We've taken market share from all major players, domestic and overseas. And with the capacity which we've built in the meantime and the productivity gains we have, we are in a position to compete and to stick to this couple of percent extra. And it's more than a couple, I think. In the meantime, we have increased, well, total capacity, total market share. I mean, it's going to be a couple of percent, but if you look in the big scheme of things, including underlay, we have definitely grown the market. The market has grown over the last few months, but we have grown more. And this is the message. And we are prepared to tackle it without having to do mega investments in order to do that. All the investments have happened in the past, and we are glad that they have come to fruition. Mike?
Fantastic. Thanks for that, Philip. I think the two key messages that I think we need to emphasize is firstly that the company has outperformed the market this year. As Philip was saying, we have gained market share in all our markets as a result of some of the restructuring and reorganization that we've done over the last couple of years. It's put us in a position where we have been able to outperform the market. And the second major thing is the increase in operating margin. Again, this is purely because of all the restructuring that Philip's done over the last couple of years and the investments that we've made, factory closures, upgrading plant and machinery. All of that's now delivering exactly as planned, and we have a sustainable increase in our operating margin of 300 bps over last year. So those are the two key points, and with that, I just want to hand it over for any questions.
Thank you. If you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. Our first question comes from the line of Charles Hall from Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone. Well done on a terrific period post-lockdown. First question, could you just comment a little bit about trading in October and November, how that's compared to that first 4 months, just trying to get a feel for whether there was initial pent-up demand because of the lockdown period, and so just have a feel for how the start of H2 has gone. And secondly, obviously you've got a very strong sales performance in those 4 months, which has helped the margin performance, but as you say, you've made significant strides in terms of synergy and cost savings. How much do you perceive that the EBITDA margin improvement to be sustainable?
Okay. I'll get Philip to answer that, Charles, because he's obviously close to operations, but we think the 300 bit margin improvement is sustainable. Victoria's actually got quite low operational gearing. So, I mean, that stood us in very good stead when, of course, revenue fell over the lockdown period. But it also means that although we have had revenue growth, that hasn't been what's driven the margin improvements. It's been the removal of operating costs and the improvement in productivity that's driven the margin improvements. So we think they're sustainable. But I'll let Philip talk to you about the trading in the last couple of months.
Yeah, I can only confirm what Jeff says. The 300 basis points is at least I would not expect to fall back to any different number than keeping this 300 basis points. When it comes to trading, a trading update. So we've had a solid October month, which was in line with the 4 months which we've just reported here. If I look in November, of course we've ran into a new lockdown in November, a 4-week lockdown, but it is a different lockdown than the first lockdown we had earlier this year. In the first lockdown, everything was closed and we've had to close the factories for over 8 weeks. So this is different. The factories have continued to produce. We had a lot of back orders, so we have produced the back orders. Also, the customers, a lot of retailers were still open, although the front door was not open, the back door was open, so we could do the deliveries, so they were taking the deliveries. So it has enabled us to reduce the number of back orders which we have, so shipment-wise, we are fine. Order-taking-wise, we have seen in the last 4 weeks, let's say, a drop between 15 and 20%, but we won't see that in the revenue, because we're expecting another good. So when the shops reopen again now, we will see a good solid 2 weeks for the run up to Christmas. And it's going to be hectic. It's going to be manic because people will want to have their product or their carpet delivered and installed before Christmas. So it's always a hectic period up till the 15th to 16th of December. So, but all in all, and I think it was mentioned earlier by Jeff in the trading update as well, that the demand, that it would have little effect, and this is how I can reconfirm that.
Brilliant. And have you seen
Charles, just before we go on, can I just emphasise when Philip was talking about the 15 to 20% drop in revenue, that relates purely to the UK, because none of the other places have got lockdowns.
No.
So we've still got revenue growth in all the other markets. It's just the UK that's dropped off in the last couple of weeks.
That's what I wanted to check. Have you seen a similar situation in France or less impacted than the UK?
When we speak about the continent, then we speak about ceramics because there's very little carpet that we are exporting to the continent. So it's 99% of what we're making stays in the UK in carpet. And underlay, we have a bit of export. But if we have a look at the other markets, I think you have to differentiate more the end uses. If I look at what's happening in DIY, as I mentioned earlier in Italy, we are still at full capacity and looking. We are outsourcing capacity for the moment because the demand in DIY is massive in the same countries, mainly Eastern Europe and Germany. You referred to France. France was a bit slower. France is coming back now. We have a lot of orders from France as well. And in our Spanish factories, we are at full capacity as well because we bring the inventories up to speed. As I said, in order to do a delivery, you have to compose an order in full. We have to deliver in full. So we're bringing, recomposing that inventory in order to be making these deliveries. So across everywhere, the business is still solid in Australia as well. Don't forget it's summer. It's extremely hot now in Australia. But the demand is still better than last year as well in Australia.
Brilliant. And just quickly on the acquisition front, obviously it's very early days since the KD investment, but can you just update us, Jeff, on thoughts on timings and quantum of acquisitions that you might be doing over the course of the next 12 months?
Look, we have been prospecting quite actively as soon as the lockdown ended in Europe in early June. And we've got a number of conversations in a reasonably advanced position now, but it's unlikely we will see anything significant this side of Christmas. But I would expect a flurry of activity early in the new year. And as I've said in the sort of summary at the end of this presentation, vendors' pricing expectations have moderated, I'm pleased to say, over the last 9 months. And price expectations have moderated, but also businesses where they were previously, the owners were undecided as to whether or not they wanted to sell. They are more motivated sellers now than they were previously. So I think you can expect to see sort of a lot of activity on the M&A front next year.
Perfect.
Great. Actually, just as a last comment, we've finished all the main integration of the deals that we have done is now finished. There will be no management. I mean, Philip basically just has his feet up smoking a pipe most of the time at the moment. So, there's plenty of management bandwidth now that we've finished all the integration projects of the previous deals and all the reorganization. They're all complete. So there's a lot of management bandwidth to cope with the any inbound acquisitions.
Is it fair to say, Jeff, if we're looking at M&A, that it's going to be a variety of larger and smaller companies?
Yep.
The money which will be spent on acquisitions is not only going to be focused towards one or a couple of big acquisitions. So we remain in our entrepreneurial circumstance or bubble, let's say, in order to do these acquisitions.
Lovely. Thanks, everyone.
And just as a reminder, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. The next question comes from the line of Richard Higginbotham from N+1 Singer. Please go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. I just wondered, could you provide a little bit of color around what's happening with selling prices and raw material pricing at the moment, given the conditions have been pretty variable in the markets and where you are today?
Sure.
Philip? Yeah. So first of all, I can say if we focus on the UK, we have done a recent price increase in November, partially November, partially December, because we were expecting some changes in raw material prices and the cost of logistics. So we have anticipated that, and we're very lucky that we've done that because we see some light inflationary pressure for the moment. It could very well be that this continues into the first quarter next year, but we are geared up, so we have already announced that there's going to be another price increase in the back end of January, and this is regardless whether there's a hard Brexit or not. So we'll see how this goes, but this is just excluding the Brexit effect. So we're looking for price increases, and if there's fluctuation in the raw material prices, we immediately pass that on to our customers. So there's not a shadow of a doubt that we will be that we will be absorbing these ourselves.
Any indication you can give of the sort of size of increases that the market is accepting in these conditions?
It depends on the product category. To give you one example, in underlay, there could very well be price increases of anywhere between 5% and 8%. In carpet, it's more between the 3% and 5% that the market is looking at to cover the cost. To cover the cost, as I said, of raw material. But we are still at low raw material prices, but there's small changes, and also to cover the cost of logistics, because containers seem to be popping up in price slightly, because the whole supply chain from China is a bit disrupted. But for the moment, we don't suffer this so much, but we just have to anticipate.
Great, thank
you. Richard, we've got quite good pricing power. In fact, Victoria's demonstrated over the last 7 or 8 years that we have very, very good pricing power because we are a vitally important supplier to most of our retailers, whereas no one of the individual retailers is important to Victoria. And I don't mean that in a callous sense. It's just that if one small shop somewhere decides to move away from Victoria product, it's not really going to make a difference to us. So, but if we stopped supplying them, it would be completely disruptive to their business and could finish it. So what it means is that we've got very, very good pricing power, we're able to, within reason, we're able to recover any raw material price increases without any difficulty, and we've done so on a number of occasions over the last few years.
And also we've added suppliers in preparation for Brexit because of the volumes we were expecting to bring in this side of Christmas. We have to add suppliers, so it has also benefited the pricing power which we have. We've tendered away a few of the bigger quantities which we need in the various product categories, whether that's clay or whether that's yarn or whether that's primary or secondary backing. So we have more suppliers now, so and we try to manage the cost of raw materials in a very detailed way.
Super. Thank you very much.
And the next question comes from the line of Mark Pathaitis from Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning, guys. Just a question for Philippe on the UK logistics piece. Mm-hmm. I think at the beginning of the year, Philippe, you were looking to get your next day delivery up to around 85%. Can you comment on where you are on next day? And I guess, you know, how that's going to play out for what's going to be a very busy December month.
Yeah. So the on-time delivery, so for the moment, for available stock, we are quoting, we have moved from 91 to 93%. So we say within three days. On next day delivery, we are close to 90 now. We are at 88.5 or 89% on next day delivery. We are trying to close in, and normally we should be in a position to come to 95%. And this is for available stock. For the moment, there's a few back orders. We don't manage that. We manage it separately because there's a bit of a backlog. Of course, if you're growing the way we have grown with over 30% and in cuts over 45%, so of course it takes a bit of time to accommodate that. But having said that, we are speeding up all even the cutting operation. We have added, as I said, we've added vehicles. We even using some third-party vehicles in order to accommodate all the orders we have and to bring them into the or with the customers before the mid of December. But our number is improving, Mark, and we are. And you've seen the operation, Mark. So and the shifts we can add, we have another 25-30%. Available capacity for cut length even if the market was to grow. So, of course, we just have to grow the vehicles to go with it, but we can use third-party logistics for doing that. But we can cope with any growth which we can see in the foreseeable future without having to invest extra in cutting tables or anything else.
Great. Thank you. And Mike, can I just ask what the impact of the extra week was in terms of revenues and EBITDA?
Hey, sure, Mark. Hi. All of the figures that the extra week is the extra week. So just so everyone's aware, we our accounting periods we do in a whole week basis. So our months we go with like a 4-5-4 kind of quarterly accounting period. That's for historical reasons. And so every few years we have a year with an extra week, and this is one of them. So the period just gone was a 27-week period as opposed to a 26-week period. But Mark, that all of the like-for-like figures that we've been quoting stripped that out effectively. So all the like-for-like growth figures that we've reported have corrected that.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
And the next question comes from the line of Robert Chantry from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning everyone. I think some of the main questions have been answered already, but I just have three quick follow-ups. I guess firstly, could you just give us a quick update on the state of the global ceramics market, if there's any flows, trade flows or pricing differences that there are to be aware of between continents or regions, etc. Secondly, the Ascot acquisition seems to be relatively small in EV, but quite important in terms of the capacity it's given in Italy. How many of those assets do you think you'll ultimately need? Are there any bigger solutions that you could think of to take advantage of the kind of DIY opportunity in Eastern Europe? And I suppose thirdly, there was a comment in the RNS around the distinction between the construction commercial market in Spain and the residential market, specifically with Saloni. Could you just expand on that a bit, and if it kind of impacts your desire to go down the more residential route in the future with any future M&A? Thanks very much.
Okay,
I'll let
Robert.
Philip answer most of those questions. I'll just quickly tell you about the M&A, Rob, and then Philip can answer all the operational questions. Firstly, on M&A, we need the construction or commercial market is much more cyclical than residential, always has been, always will be, and it's good to have some presence, and we're considerably underweight in terms of our exposure to the commercial market, but it's good to have some, because when it does come back, it really juices the results for a year or two. But our focus will stay on acquiring companies that focus on the residential market, which is much more stable. The Ascot deal, which I did back in March of this year, was simply to add capacity. The Cera business, as Philip was telling you, has grown enormously since we've acquired it, and we desperately needed more capacity. The only two options that we had available really was to either outsource the business or look to buy an existing factory that had spare capacity, because building a new factory, installing the plant and machinery, buying the emission rights would take 18 months to 2 years, and our growth rate was such that we just needed the capacity immediately. So we bought this bankrupt company, and we effectively just picked up the assets and the brand, but in reality that was all we got. It was all we wanted too, by the way, and so that was a very cost-effective and efficient way of adding production capacity, which has allowed us to continue to grow the business, as you can see with those revenue numbers in Italy. However, it's continued to keep growing since then. I mean, the business is just on fire, and we're now looking at other options to do exactly the same sort of thing. In other words, buy somebody that's either in bankruptcy or about to be, and there's a few of them in Italy. We will then just Philip will just then integrate their factory into our production scheme. So there's two or three options, and don't be at all surprised if you see something along these lines early in the new year, because at the moment, as Philip said a few minutes ago, we are already back to outsourcing production. So anyway.
Rob, for the Ascot, when we bought Ascot, the available capacity in Ascot was around 8 million square meters, of which half of that was, let's say, really available, because half of the other capacity was taken by Ascot and Dome, their two own brands themselves. So the available capacity we have used to make the porcelain production, which Cera was outsourcing. So, and all of that, the Ascot production is for the moment is completely full. So we are looking, as mentioned before, and as Jeff has re-mentioned, so to look for some bolt-on acquisitions. So there's a good demand for this type of tile, and we don't want to expand the sizes of tiles which we are making, because we can produce as cheap as we can, because we are very focused on the sizes which we are making. So if we can do without an extra size, we don't go to an extra size, because we like to allocate one or two sizes to one kiln, which is the dryer of or the cooker, let's say, of the tiles. So very focused in what we're looking for in extra capacity. So first part of your question, the update on the global ceramic market. So I think you have to make a distinction in Europe and outside Europe. In Europe, the market is strong, especially in DIY. And we are seeing that DIY is not only good for the cheap and cheerful, let's say, it's also good for the medium to high end, because DIY is improving DIY is selling larger tiles for the moment as well, is selling medium to high end product as well. And we can see that for the simple reason that our upmarket brand, which is selling medium to high-end product in Spain, the Kerabin brand and the Casa Infinita brand, they are starting. We do more business in DIY. Our DIY business for the Spanish company has grown. And it couldn't grow in Italy almost, because most of what we're selling is already in DIY in Italy. So this market, DIY, is extremely buoyant. If we look then at the other market in Europe, which is more the Spanish-led market or customer type, which is the independent retailer selling ceramics product. So it took a bit longer for them to come back, but now they are back to where we wanted them at a regular and at a normal speed of ordering. So Europe, if we look at the total ceramics market in Europe, I think it is still growing slightly, 1 or 2%. What we see outside Europe is a different picture, because outside Europe, so we can see that wherever a brand has no importance, like a name Kerabin or Saloni, outside Europe is of lesser importance. There's very little global brands, let's say. So, and then we see some more price competition outside Europe. This is why we refocus on our business, which we're having in Europe. We've even decided in Spain to add an extra brand, which will come on stream in the beginning of next year, an extra brand where we will be making product for the DIY as well. So, in general, so we don't see a fallback in ceramics. If anything, some price pressure outside of Europe. And as a result, some of these capacities come back to Europe. But don't forget, we've done a lot of OPEX exercises in the ceramics production facilities now, and we are making ceramics tiles cheaper now than ever before. So we can compete with what we have if ever we were to come or to face some more price pressure. Then third part of your question, Rob, was construction versus residential. As we all know, the Victoria Group is 90% residential. The factory where we do, or the brand where we sell most of the contract with, is, as you rightly mentioned, is the Saloni brand. Saloni has become slightly under pressure, mainly on the French market, because the French market was a bit slower, but we've recuperated in the integration we've done over Casa Infinita and Kerabin brand. So we see, and if I look at competing factories which are selling contract products, we can see that they are all performing at 20-30% less. This is not the rate we're seeing in Saloni. So we're slightly down in Saloni, and we have some big projects which we are finishing in the first half of next year. But if the question is, do we want to keep expanding in construction? No, we are focused. The group is focused on residential, and we will keep on being focused on residential. But it's good to have this end use on contract business, because eventually this business is going to come back like any other business. It may very well take another 6 months for the contract market to recover to the extent the residential market has recovered. We are pretty confident that we don't have to change the strategy.
Thank you. Very clear.
And we have one more follow-up question from the line of Charles Hall from Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Can I just go back to the UK and just explore more the growth in market share that you've had over the last few months? And then you're obviously putting through price increases, but you say you expect mm-hmm. to hold on to that market share. Is that because you expect others to follow your price increases, or do you see that your position in the market has improved because of your early recovery out of coming out of lockdown?
Yeah. So we are capitalizing now on the service, which we have improved, and this is the main reason why. Don't forget, immediately after lockdown, the customers were screaming for product. They wanted to have their product in very quickly, and we were there for them. So we've gained a lot of confidence and accrued a lot of confidence with our customers, and they are not likely to forget that, and I can see that. If I look on the graph of how the sales is performing, I don't see, after the big pent-up demand, a big fall. So the difference remains the same. The same if I look at the increased cuts which we're having up to the end of November. So we don't have any fallback. And the cut length gives you exactly what is happening in the market, because we're not dealing a lot with wholesalers who are buying stock. So you don't have, when you deal with wholesalers, you don't have a good idea and you can't see where the market is going, because the wholesaler may be stocking up carpet. But on the cut length, this is an immediate sale in the shop. So we can see that. And there's, I think we've managed to build confidence, which will allow us to keep the extra market share which we are having. Don't forget also, and this is now carpet related, like in underlay, even the only thing we've raised in prices was the accessories. We even, although the market was going up, we even did not want to raise the prices into the market. First, for the simple reason, first of all, because we didn't have to. We could have used it, but instead of that, we have decided to gain customer confidence. And now we have an incredible market share in underlay carpet. We don't want to take advantage to that. And we remain loyal to our customers. And if anything, over the last 4 to 5 months, we've bought customer confidence, and we've built incredibly on customer intimacy, because our sales guys have always been there. We've not gone back to government in a big way to take furlough schemes in order to offset some of the costs. Instead of that, we made the investment to keep our sales guys in the market with our customers, dealing with their needs.
That's great. Thanks.
And as there are no further questions, I'll hand it back to the speakers for closing remarks.
All right. Well, thanks very much, everybody, for joining us. And we're looking forward to a very, very solid second half for all the reasons that we've outlined this morning. And so that's the end of the call. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.